Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, listeners. Before we get going today, I want to tell you that we've teamed up with Honest Brew, which I really think is brilliant. Jamie, after a hard day's work, what's the thing you want more than anything else, apart from seeing your fiancé and child, obviously?
Probably a cold beer.
Me too. And what beer do you like?
I don't know, like craft beers mainly, like Beaver Town, Meantime, Five Points, that kind of thing.
Yep, those are great. I personally like to rep the South London beers, so I drink a lot from Brixton and Gypsy Hill.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure how easy it is to get those beers at my local shop.
Aha! Well, that's where Honest Brew comes in. Honest Brew delivers beer from the best independent craft breweries right to your door, so no more schlepping back and forth to the nearest hipster off license.
You've just described a situation where I never have to leave the house. Where do I sign up?
Just head to their online shop. There you can pick and mix your own selection of beers, purchase a gift, or get your hands on one of their curated mixed cases. And remember, Honest Brew's craft beer experts taste test every beer listed, so they're all good. And the good news for Good Dad Ugly listeners is that you can get £10 off your first order with the code FATHERHOOD.
Cheers!
Hello and welcome to The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the Fatherhood podcast. I'm Seth, a new dad, and on each episode you'll hear me and my good pal Jamie,
hello,
who's also a new dad, as we chat with our special guest each month about everything that comes with modern day fatherhood. Along the way, you'll also get the latest highs and lows and thrills and spills as Jamie and I foray further into these unfamiliar, joyful and often choppy waters.
Choppy waters.
Choppy waters. Choppy waters. Choppy waters.
Hello and welcome to episode 13 of The Good, The Dad and The Ugly. This is a bit of a special podcast, this one. We don't have a guest this time round. We just thought we'd, because it's been like a year, our last episode was obviously episode 12. So it's been a year since we've been doing the podcast and Eliza's a year old. And so we thought we'd just do a kind of look back at sort of some of our favourite bits from the last 12 episodes. It's just the four of us, me, Jamie, Tom and Benji, in the studio for our kind of annual party, our kind of 12-month anniversary.
Yeah, a birthday party.
Birthday party, yeah. We're just kicking back with a couple of beers, courtesy of Honest Brew.
Yeah.
Tom's eating a pizza, because he arrived late. We're going to hear from Tom and Benji for like the first time.
I think we're going to be getting more progressively drunk during this, so apologies if the standard of chat goes down towards the end of this podcast.
You might think that there's not much further we can go down.
So I mean the main thing we should talk about really is a year of you being a dad, right? I think the best question to ask anyone is, how do you think you've changed?
Yeah. I don't know. You know what? It's funny. Like, I think I've probably spoken about this before. I kind of, before Alice and I had Eliza, we'd already kind of fallen into a pattern of being kind of a bit middle-aged and not really doing that much. I felt like we would go out for dinner and things, and but like, you know, the drinking was really scaled back,
the raving,
you know, just the frantically going all over London seeing people scaled way back. So in some ways, life hasn't changed that much. Obviously, you know, having a child does change the dynamic at home.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it is hard. Yeah. As we discussed, I think, on the last episode with Alex Baker, I think that obviously having a child is hard. And there's a steep like learning curve to it. But I think, you know, there's two things that sort of impact people's sort of experiences of it, or how they kind of describe those to other people. Like, sometimes, you know, children can vary in how much of a handful they are, I suppose. But the other thing is just that some people are just more prone to, you know, talking up the hard stuff.
But I also think there are, you know, I think I've been, and I think maybe we've both been quite lucky in respect that we haven't had, and this is very much in inverted commas, difficult, not children, but experiences, I guess.
Yeah.
Because I think one of the things, I remember my NCT woman saying to us that just because, and I think I've said this on a previous podcast, that just because your child doesn't sleep at night doesn't make them bad.
No.
Doesn't make them a bad, because the temptation is to say, oh, your baby's really good because they sleep. And it's not about that. It's just every baby's different and every baby has a different experience. But we have been lucky in the sense that our babies have given us a break in the sleeping, you know, area of things. That it's meant that everything else is that much.
Yeah.
It takes, you know, the... Is it that much easier, I think?
Who is your daddy? Daddy, and what does he do?
Episode one was with a friend of the podcast, Ben Ockram, for our pilot episode.
And he's a theatre director, film director, screenwriter, multi-talented, all-round good guy, and father of Ezra. His, I think he's two now? Yeah, something like that? Three? Two and a half.
Oh, that had some hilarious bits in it. That famously, we had the perineum massage explanation before you didn't know what it was.
I had no idea.
One of the main points of this podcast, I suppose, this series, is for me to kind of learn about the things that I need to learn about. One of them, you know, is to do with, you know, the things that I should be doing. And as an example, the perineum massage, which if but those people who are listening who may not have heard of this.
I have no idea.
You don't know what it is?
Nope.
Ben, do you want to describe what it is?
Do you know what the perineum is?
I think so.
It's the bit between
the
genitals and the anus.
Yep. The gooch, as we call it at uni.
Mm.
The gooch.
So
carry on.
They should just change it to the gooch massage.
I think so.
So obviously tearing, like vaginal tearing is a thing that can happen during childbirth.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that, as I understand it, that can tear. So perineum massage is massaging the perineum, which you can get like oils to do. And what it involves is for about 15 minutes.
Is it... Hang on a minute.
5 minutes? 5 minutes.
It's a shock in your face.
No, because I've been doing this. Because obviously you did it.
I have done it.
Yeah, so I've been doing it.
Five minutes.
No,
1 minute.
4 minutes.
You get tired.
My fingers get very tired. And I appreciate that sounds very, very pathetic. But I do actually have... I do actually have like kind of a mild sort of arthritis in my hands. Jamie's laughing. It's actually true. So like 4 minutes is actually fine, I've found.
That's fine.
4 minutes.
How did you learn to do it?
Oh, you poor thing.
Did you watch a video? I think I watched a YouTube video.
Did you watch a video? I should have watched a video because I just read the sort of paper instructions that they give.
That's on YouTube.
I think it's a YouTube thing. I think that's where I watched it. And
I think that'd be bad.
But you don't just like massage that bit on the surface. You have to obviously massage from the vagina down towards that bit, and then you're effectively just limbering it up, really, and you're getting it used to, you're making it supple, really, and making it used to the stretching that will be involved. And the theory is that then mitigates what can help prepare it and hopefully help stop tearing.
Wowza. So
is it something
is that
you
NCT?
Think...
That's NCT.
Mm. Well, it's definitely brought up in NCT classes.
Is that something I don't know. I haven't even committed to taking the desk out of the front room to make way for the baby yet,
I found it's quite fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it sounds like
say second and it convinced about.
No, I 15 minutes over here. Yes, to vindicate.
But maybe I've been. I was supposed to be doing.
It took me
minutes.
Back to teenage fingering.
Yeah,
and was a real education in how wrong that was.
Yeah, that was seems a long time ago.
Mm.
That was like before Eliza actually arrived. Yeah, so when we bashed that one out.
Yeah, we were both soon to be dads. And then by episode two, you were a dad.
I was a dad, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it wasn't long after that we recorded episode two with our friend Will.
No.
I mean, is that all still quite a bit hazy for you? Or do you remember... Is that quite still... Is the whole... Because you told your birth story in episode two. Is that still quite present in your mind? Do you still remember that day as well now as you kind of did back then? Is it still quite...
It is still kind of quite imprinted in my brain.
Do you think it's ever going to be something you kind of get hazy on? Or do you think it is a...
Well, we've got it sort of committed to audio.
That's true.
So we got in the pool and we were doing, like I say, yeah, we were doing the gas and air. So Alice was doing it and then I was doing a bit.
How was that? Is it a proper nice little high?
Yeah.
What's it like?
I don't know. I've never done anything like
that. No, maybe you had to liken it.
Have you ever been to the dentist?
Yes.
Right. So,
yeah.
Or have you ever done balloons at a party?
Yeah.
At 5 o'clock in the morning?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's like that as well. It's quite fun. We were listening to The National.
Yes, what track? What track?
We had on Fake Empire, I think.
Yes, that is the best birthing song. The best track by The National. Well done, good choice.
Yeah,
great choice.
I think so. So I was having a great time. But Alice was getting more and more, she was getting more and more uncomfortable.
You're having a party.
Yeah. And so the gas in there was kind of working to an extent, but it's supposed to, again, it's a sort of a distractionary thing. It doesn't really kill the pain. It's supposed to just sort of confuse your brain into thinking that you're not in excruciating pain. And so it was sort of not really working. And you've got to time it right as well. You've got to do it at the right moment. So it sort of peaks as you're having the height of the
contraction. Like any drugs, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't know about that.
Neither would I.
Then Alice said to me, "What's the time?" And I said, 3:30. And she was like, "What? I thought I'd been in here for like 2 hours and it's been like 10 minutes. She's like, "Right, give me the epidural."
No.
And then there was a bit back and forth like that. And then we were like, okay, she means business now.
Yeah. But you did go for it.
Basically, you realise afterwards that is the classic moment when they're like, right, no fucking about now. Let's fucking get
stage one to stage two.
That is exactly.
Yeah.
That's when you're transitioning to like the final stage.
That's when the adrenaline kicks in and everything goes pretty mental.
So we were getting her out of the pool, getting a little wheelchair thing to take her around to the labour ward and call the anaesthetist and all that kind of stuff. And as she's getting out of the pool, that's when the mucus plug dropped out. And I was like, oh, hello. That is disgusting. But also...
What was it like?
It's really like dark red, the colour of like head blood.
Oh.
You know, that kind of thing. Yeah. And it's mucusy as well. It's got like an edge, a residue of kind of like snot. So
yummy.
Yeah. So I fished that out and saved it for
standard
later. So she got up and then she was like walking, and the midwife had said to her, "Do you feel like the sensation to like poo or anything like that? Or do you feel you need to push?" And she was like, "No, no." I realized afterwards she was saying that because she did want to feel like pooing and need to push. But she was worried that if she said that she did, that they wouldn't give her the epidural. So she lied.
Ooh.
So they
the lying thing works.
Yeah, exactly. Well.
Yeah, for so long.
Well, exactly. They find you out eventually, Jamie. Yeah. She was walking towards the wheelchair to sit down for them to take her through. And then she said, "Oh, like I can kind of feel something." And she said afterwards, she told me that she wasn't going to say that, but she was like, "I can't lie about this." She was like, okay, I'm going to need to check you. So she checked her and she was basically like, yeah, the baby's coming. That period was like probably like 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
And it just went, just zoomed by. And then at the end of it, there was a baby.
So it's happened. I'm here with the baby. Hello, baby. He's just sucking your little hand. I mean, I've literally never been so amazed in my life. Alice was amazing. The midwives were amazing. It was incredible. Now we've got this lovely, beautiful baby. You can hear her breathing.
Do you know what I find funny about that is that I gave you so much shit about you going home. And leaving. And I genuinely at the time thought that when it came to it, I would 100% stay. And it turns out I didn't. So I feel bad that I gave you so much shit. So I want to formally apologize for that. Because I think a lot of people do go home. And it's fine to go home. Because a hospital isn't the best place for, you know, more than one person to stay.
I don't think the hospital people want like dads hanging around sleeping on the floor either.
It's better if they just get one-on-one, because the dads can be a more pain in the ass. They just...
Well, you were trying to like steal fucking Nat's bed, weren't you? So
I did steal Nat's bed. Yeah.
So then we had episode 3 with Jerry.
Yeah.
Who was talking about the IVF journey.
Mm.
And there were some serious lulls in that episode.
Yeah, I think that was the when we had Jerry's episode that we realized that there's quite a lot of alternative funny stories out there that we probably didn't really think of when we started this. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think I didn't expect him to come to us with the his so much masturbation chat.
There was a lot of wank chat.
Yeah. I mean, I knew there would be wank chat, but I didn't know it'd be like wank chat.
Yeah. There were levels to that wank chat.
Yeah.
So we've already sort of discussed that it's quite an involved process for the woman.
Yeah.
For the man, you know, that what...
You have to go and give sperm, right?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Is this the first time you've done that?
Like
given sperm.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking about that.
In a medical way.
Yes, right, yeah. Yeah, it was. I'm just trying to think. I can't remember if I had to do it before to analyze it. But yeah, no, you go in a little room and you know, you've got to have a wank basically. And,
yeah.
I've done it twice because for each round you've got to do it, yeah.
And it was, I mean, how's it? Does it, what it, was it must the, be quite a weird experience.
It is a bit weird. Obviously, it is quite surreal. You're in this room, but I think, you know, it's.
What was the porn like?
Well, that's the first time I didn't use any. I didn't even know that it was porn there the first time.
So you
time.
Just used the wank bank.
Yeah, exactly. My wank bank's full and, you know, it's I was going to say it's thriving there, but no, I mean, and then obviously, then the second time I did notice the pedestal and there was some in there, but the thing is, it's almost seedier kind of, not seedier, it's kind of dirty touching it, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't really need it. So
it was just magazines? There wasn't like a video or anything?
No, just magazines. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Kind of weird ones as well. I mean, not weird, but it's just a bit, if it seemed like 80s, I guess, I think, I think I seem to remember. But yeah, no, both times I just kind of...
Oh, it must be really encrusted.
Nowadays, it's all online, right? I mean, you
is wait. It? I don't know.
No, but, so they don't have like a computer set up?
No, they don't. It's all proper magazines, which is...
You bring in your login details.
That's why I said 80s or 90s.
Chrome incognito window set up. But you don't need it there. You don't need an incognito window.
No, it's just, you can go on...
It's legit. It's one legitimate time.
They've got bookmarks. It's fine. Yeah. You just go through.
You didn't have a problem.
No.
Because I imagine some people would sort of, you know, freeze up a little bit at the prospect of having to beat off in a room. With someone standing outside waiting.
Yeah.
Sort of knocking on the door. Says, sorry, there's someone else out here. Can you hurry up? Like, I didn't know this, that you can take your partner potentially into the wanking room.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Facilitate the...
Yeah. I didn't know either. Seth told me, yeah, and yeah, you can, I guess, and that's you know, probably quite a good help for, you know, for those that... And
probably, you say that, like, it's probably just easier just to get it done. Do you know what I mean? Like,
just go, I've got this.
Totally.
Don't worry.
This is my...
I know what works. I'll be out in 5 minutes. It's fine.
Less than that, yeah.
You're just going to muddle things and just, it doesn't, this is unnecessary.
there were, it should be said as well, some quite kind of, you know, some pretty deep bits in that, obviously, about the sort of journey that they'd had with kind of miscarriages.
Yeah.
And, you know, the difficulties just with the treatment.
And I was really shocked to hear when I was talking to someone about it quite recently that it's, and I did not know this, that it's 1 in 3 pregnancies end in a miscarriage. It's
1 in 3?
1 in 3, yeah.
I did not know that
either. No. And that's just such a stupidly high number.
Mm.
So, you know, it is, you know, and it makes when you do have a baby through IVF or through however you know, you do conceive and give birth, just that much more amazing. I think there's a lot of stories similar to Jerry's, and hopefully I think Jerry's kind of shone a bit of a light on that world that I didn't know about.
So the one thing that's harder than having like a child is having two children at the same time.
Twins. Yeah, is what they're called.
Yeah, that is what they're called.
Yeah.
And we spoke to Jim on episode 4.
Yeah, Jim Hickey. Yeah, and he has twin girls, which he spoke quite openly about.
Yeah.
And the struggles of that.
Yeah.
But he seemed pretty chilled about it.
He did, yeah.
I doubt he was that chilled when
there were some tough stories in there about kind of the difficulties with breastfeeding, with two babies. And
see, that's not something you think about as a guy, I don't think.
Can I just ask, how did you find out, first of all, and then like what was your reaction?
So we went for the routine scan. I think we had it at about 14 weeks because like second time round, I don't know whether it was just we weren't as on it and we were just like, yeah, you know, whatever, we'll go in. But we went in for the routine scan and there's no discussion about the sex at that scan, I don't think. And we, you know, just he's doing the scan and he's just sort of kind of drops something about kind of, yeah, they're doing well, you know, or, you know, there seems to be, there seems to, you know, the heartbeats seem to be doing well. He made some kind of little kind of dropping a hint, plural, that might suggest that, you know, he's kind of like them waiting for you to hear the sound of a jaw hitting the floor. And he's kind of then, you know, like there's some sort of like little kind of perverse thing going on, just waiting to see how long it takes to compute.
I bet they love that.
I bet they have a Top Gear kind of like board of how many seconds it took for the parents to realize they're having twins. Like, what was your immediate reaction?
My immediate reaction was that I laughed. yeah, which is obviously a very blokey reaction to do. And my missus cried. So, yeah, there was sort of both ends covered.
Cried with joy. Yeah, well, that's what I was going to ask. Cried with joy or cried with terror?
I would imagine it was probably a bit of both. Yeah, I'd imagine it was probably a bit of both. Because I can imagine that maybe you're just flashing forward at that point as to what that is going to do and how that is going to feel.
So, Jim, could you just sort of like talk to us about the actual birth itself and how that went down?
Yeah, the birth was it ended up being in theatre.
Yeah.
Once Honor was sort of delivered and she was taken off to the kind of be put under a heat lamp and given a rub and kind of swaddled up and all that stuff, I found myself naturally sort of wanting to go off and check with her what was going on, that she was all right. But then you're sort of going, oh God, I need to go back there as well. And I've just kind of spent about 20 seconds dithering and working out where I was probably going to do the least damage. So you're kind of like, oh, do I go with this one? Because is she okay? You know, how's she getting on? Is she breathing all right? Is she making a noise? Is she crying? But then there's obviously your missus is still there.
Presumably there's like a midwife there checking.
Yeah. They didn't just kind of like pop her in and kick it over and it was wheeled over to a heat lamp. It was, you know, I think they were on it. I don't think they were that bothered about where I was, to be honest. I think they couldn't see that I was being that effective anywhere. But
I mean, it's probably, I imagine this is sort of magnified, you know, in the situation of having twins, but already difficult birth perhaps. But I think that in general, you do, as a dad in that situation, you do feel like a little bit of a spare part.
Oh,
like
yeah.
You realise that you don't really need to be there for anything.
I don't need to be there.
No, Jamie, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that you don't really need to be there. Like, there's nothing that you can really do that is that crucial to the whole process.
I will provide tunes and be pretty much the on-call DJ, I reckon. That'll be my role. making sure that it's Shire FX and drum and bass and basically and Prince.
I think most birthing centres do have decks in the corner actually. Yeah. So bring
smoke
your
machine.
Bring your 12 inches. Yeah.
They all probably right, provide cool. DJs as well. Not on the NHS.
So your girls, do they, are their personalities very, very different because they're twins? Or do they kind of share a lot of traits because they're twins? I guess it could probably go both ways, really.
I think they have more similarities than differences. I think they're really similar in their personalities. They're both really, they are both really creative. They both love kind of art and stuff and doing stuff like that, and they love, I mean, it's difficult to tell because again just
you can't tell them apart.
It's really difficult to tell because I still don't know which one's which. It's difficult to tell because we've probably always tried to do the same things with both of them, so if one of them didn't turn around and complain that they hated it, we'd just keep going. So you know, they both like are doing piano lessons, they both do like ballet, and if someone, one of them turned around and said like, you know what, I really hate it, I don't want to go anymore, obviously we would take them out of it. But they always just like doing things together. So I think because of that, there's not that many kind of really marked differences. And I think they are very similar. I think one of them's a better manipulator than the other.
Which one's that?
knows. Yeah. And one of them's a bit more happy-go-lucky. But, that, you know, there's a kind of subtle differences. But it's hard to know whether that's kind of nature or nurture.
Yeah.
But you know,
yeah.
Well, that's why like twins are so kind of like fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because like that's how you can kind of answer some of those really complicated questions about nature and nurture in theory. Because weren't you thinking about sending one of them to like a private school?
And yeah, because we only had the money for one. So. No, it was an interesting thought. I thought, you know, this is a real way to find out how different they are and to do a sort of a, you know, a kind of whole, yeah, social experiment with them.
So but, like homeschool one, or keep one in the shed with the chickens and then send the other one to Eton. I wonder which one will come out better.
Yeah, exactly.
Episode 5 was like quite a big deal for us.
Yeah, I was quite nervous.
I was nervous because it was the first time we'd had like a big kind of draw on.
Yeah, a proper guest.
And someone that we hadn't met before.
Yeah, it wasn't a friend of a friend of a friend. It was sort of, this was someone we'd gone out to get booked and had kindly given
his time. To come.
I mean, no disrespect to the previous guests that we had because they're all legends and we love them.
Absolutely.
That's great, but this guy was a big deal. Big we rolled deal. Out the red carpet for him.
We rolled out the red carpet for FOD.
For FOD, father of daughters, Instagram sensation, and now friend of the podcast, I'd like to think.
Yeah, I'd like to think that he talks about us with his kind of, you know, friends in parenting circles in fond tones.
What I thought was quite interesting, what I thought was quite funny that FOD said was that no matter how cool he thinks he is, his kids will always find him pretty lame.
Simon, so you had the twins, two more girls. Do you feel like you're basically completely outnumbered at home?
Well, the maths tells me that I am. I mean, it's 1 against 5. Yeah, I do feel outnumbered, but I mean, not in a bad way. I think my girls aren't terribly girly girls. If they were constantly running around in fairy dresses and doing loads of girl stuff that they weren't involving me, then I might do. But in reality, I think children at this age are fairly malleable. They take on to what's around them. So if you're interested in science or I'm trying to get my daughter interested in what's going on in CERN, for example.
Right.
That's not going well, by the way. But I think it's important that they learn about these things. So I'll spend time with them talking about this stuff. And it's not that they're androgynous at this age, but they're not like women or men.
Yeah.
They're children and they are sponges of information. So it's just having that ability to relate to them and talk to them about something which is of common interest, which is great. Don't get me wrong, I still get the fairy dresses and go to gymnastic classes and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. But I've made my peace with that. And they still come and watch rugby with me, like when it's played. So we have our crossover points. We have the points where it's just me, usually when I'm doing DIY in the shed or fixing my bike or doing something like that. And I enjoy that time.
Yeah.
But I also enjoy being a bit of a girl now and again, like getting my nails done with the girls, or, you know, that, they have this obsession. I'm basically a living mannequin to them. So doing hair and nails is like the thing that they do.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, because you sort of alluded to it before, it's like that you said that you'll probably feel more outnumbered at the point when they're kind of teenagers.
Yes, definitely. I think where they get to that age where they are young women, that's probably where I'm going to be like, oh man, no, I don't know. I don't know what to do with this anymore.
But they'll probably love you. Like, I mean, not that they.
Yeah, they'll love it when I hand out the £20 notes. Yeah, I'm sure they will.
But yeah, I think,
or
just
be the taxi outside the nightclub that they're coming out of. Yeah.
No, because it's fine, because at that age, they'll start bringing boys into your life. So that's
No. We have an agreement. That's not happening. There's no way that's happening. That's one thing I do think about, like, occasionally. Like, how am I going to deal with that? I know that's a while off now. My eldest is 9, that's 6-7 years away, hopefully. I don't know. I've got no idea. How will I act when I'm in that situation? Will I be the domineering dad? Will I want to scare the crap out of him like they do in the films? Or am I going to be a little bit more accepting and trust my daughter in her judgments? And I'm not there yet, I don't know, but I've still got a couple of years to make up my mind around how that's going to look and feel.
Yeah.
And I'm sure whatever plan I have will fall apart when I meet the Joker who she's picked. So we'll wait and see.
I think the route to go on this one is to just be as embarrassing as possible.
Oh, I'm
just
already, like, doing that.
Utterly. Right, okay. We'll just ramp that up. As embarrassing and awkward as possible.
The problem is that I've found, as your children get older, it doesn't matter what you do. They find you embarrassing.
Yeah, sure.
Right, so there is nothing... You might think you are the coolest guy on the planet. Like, Anya doesn't care that I've got 589,000 followers on Instagram. She thinks I'm a moron. Like, and she thinks that my dancing is terrible, that my singing's terrible, my jokes are awful.
Yeah.
But that's just a father and daughter relationship, I guess.
Yeah.
And that I'm okay with playing that kind of fool role, if you will, because I think my dad did it to me and his dad probably did it to him. So.
Of course.
Fod actually delivered a brilliant piece of advice in that podcast.
Okay.
Which was about flying with kids. And when they're still kind of breastfeeding,
yeah,
making sure that you have like bottles and stuff prepared so that they can kind of, so that their ears can adjust the altitude.
Okay.
Because they can't obviously regulate their own ears.
Yeah.
So the way to kind of avoid that situation is to give them a bottle on takeoff.
I know we're getting some nice beers. And, you know, having a nice time. But that man, Fod, gets next level free stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the amount of things I see on his Instagram, this is where we need to be. We need to be getting the amount of free shit that he's getting. And in fact, since we had him on our podcast, I think his popularity's taken off. Because now...
Apart from the fact that his Instagram followers haven't got up as much as...
Yeah, but the brands... Like, brand involvement has, I think. Because I used to, you know, before, you know, we had him on, he was very much, oh, here are my kids. This is me in my house with dry pasta underneath the seat, whatever, whatever, whatever. Yeah, cool, we get it. Now, his Instagram feed is like, here's me posing for Barbara and their great new range of winter clothes and shit like that.
Do you think that maybe that's why the Instagram... thing has tailed off?
Ooh,
because
he's gone too sold out.
His brand was like, this is real parenting, right?
But now, like, he's the man. Now he's at the Star Wars premiere and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on a fucking boat.
He's so he's sold out on a boat at the Star Wars premiere.
Yeah.
Wearing barber jackets.
Real parenting.
Yeah. I'm on a boat. Take a look at me, straight floating on a boat on the deep blue sea. Busted by night, wind whipping out my coat. You can't stop me, motherfucker, cause I'm on a boat.
So let's hear from one of the behind the scenes guys, Benji, our sound technician, maestro, about your favourite clip of the whole, like, sort of 12 episodes, really.
Hello.
Hi, Benj.
Thanks for the question. Well, look, firstly, I have to say that coming up with my single favourite clip it's a difficult task. You know, there's a lot of clips I love. As a, I guess, as an active bystander here when we're all recording, I find it pretty tricky not to piss myself laughing. And in fact, even today, I think I've done it about 10 times.
Piss yourself.
Well, a little. Look, my role here of a Good Dad Ugly Family is largely to edit and soundscape. But I also task myself on taking sections from the main ep and turning them into standalone pieces. So I guess sort of remixing them generally to squeeze a bit more comical juice out of it, right?
Yeah.
So ultimately I try and latch onto particular conversations or discussions to elevate them and in a funny way, either within that episode itself or as an extra baby bite. So I think I tend to lean more towards material that covers serious topics, but maybe delivered in a not too serious way. So I think my favourite clip comes from a conversation with our guest from episode 3, Jerry Bougeot, which covers his experience of fatherhood, stepfatherhood, and going through IVF, as you've mentioned. He talks about having to have a clinical wank to provide a special sample for their IVF treatment, and that he was really concerned about his sperm mixing with the deodorant that he'd put on and causing problems. It's my favourite clip for so many reasons. And of course, it was fucking hilarious. You know, where do I start with that? Firstly, he felt it was scientifically sound to shoot sperm onto his belly and then scoop it up into a cup. You know, don't get me started on the logic behind that. It's ridiculous. And then the guys chime in, you guys chime in to hypothesize the birth of part human, part deodorant hybrid with a fresh superpower. I was able to gesture a salute to this fresh superhero theme in the main ep, and then I guess fully unleash my madness by way of the baby bite release, Deodorant Man.
From out of the pages of DC Comics comes the world's newest and greatest superhero.
Adventures of Deodorant Man.
I had deodorant on, right? And I was thinking, is the deodorant going to mess with the sperm? I actually wrote it on the form. They asked you, there's a bit on the form. It says, that, you know, was there anything wrong with it when you wank kind of process? And I wrote deodorant. Like, is that going to tamper with, you know, the sperm and actually might affect things when it's mixed with the egg?
You could end up with, like, some kind of, like, kind of superhero baby that, like, smells really fresh.
So yeah, inspiring clip in many ways. But what really tops this all is the fact that at the time of recording that episode, Jerry and his wife, Saskia, were actually in the middle of their 2-week IVF wait. So the superhero was actually born a few months ago, and the family have a wonderful new addition, Lucille. So this is me signing off vocally for at least a year and sending a massive shout out and lots of love to the whole Bougeot family.
Amazing stuff. Benj, I think we have to swap roles now, so I'm going to do the soundscaping for this episode.
Oh hell no! No! Oh no! Oh, hell no!
So that's the end of part one. We'll be right back with part two.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Should we do another beer?
Yeah.
Jamie, what beer are you drinking now?
Well, thanks to Honest Brew, I'm drinking one of their selections, which is the Liquid Mistress from Siren Craft Brew. And it's a red IPA, and it's 5.8%.
And that's why you're...
And it's getting me a little bit drunk, I'll be honest with you. Yeah. What about you?
You're getting leery, I am. I am drinking a beer called Inhaler, which is a juicy pale ale. What's the brewery here? Magic Rock. Yeah, Magic Rock. That's like a famous one, isn't it? They do the Cannonball. Is that the Cannonball one?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Oh, Benji's nodding his head.
It is.
Yeah.
Smashed it. And it's very nice. It's juicy. Yeah, I can see why that's a good decision.
Good. I think we've talked enough about beers now.
Okay. Larry? You all right, mate? So if episode 5 was a kind of seminal moment for the fact that we had, like, for the first time, like, a big kind of guest.
Yeah.
Episode 6 is, like, the biggest guest we've ever had.
Biggest as in...
The most famous.
The most famous, yeah.
The most famous.
Yeah. Matt Willis. What a ledge.
What a ledge.
Yeah.
What a ledge.
He kindly gave us a couple of hours of his time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think we...
X-rated that
episode. I was going to say, I think we... Had the most amount of swear words.
The most fucks in the...
I got told off for swearing a lot.
By who?
My mum. On this podcast. But Matt Willis took the fucking piss.
Fucking shit.
You're busted, buddy.
Fucking. I say the same shit.
What?
Same
shit.
Where the fuck are we? Oh shit, fucking. Oh, shit.
Fucking.
Yeah, so kids pick that shit up.
They do.
Shit. Fucking shit. Fucking. Do you know what I mean? Like, my kids find that fucking fascinating.
You're busted, buddy.
My wife doesn't like that.
Great chat, though.
Yeah.
Such a natural talker.
Yeah. He's definitely done interviews before, you can tell.
He's done a few.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? He had some deep shit to say. There was some deep shit in that about like the sort of the drugs and kicking the drugs because, you know, had his child and how that kind of helped him get clean and stuff. That was pretty heavy shit, man.
Behind the scenes, you were kind of living a quite a rock and roll lifestyle, were you?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, especially during the kind of later Busted years and beyond, really. Yeah, it was kind of quite raucous and quite crazy. But wicked, you know. Plus, you fucking got away with it because you're in a pop band.
Yeah.
So no one thought you were kind of doing anything, you know. But I have to say, man, like those Smash Hits tours, like even like after Busted, right? Like, I mean, like I did a solo record, which was, I suppose, a little bit cooler than what Busted was or whatever, you know, like, but they were nothing. Like, those fucking early Smash Hits tours were the most insane things. Like, everyone was just fucking off it the whole
really?
Time. It was crazy. It was amazing.
God. But you've said, speaking of which, you've said that fatherhood is kind of what inspired you to kind of kick all that, kick the alcohol, kick the drugs, that kind of thing. And
yeah.
And is that, I mean,
I mean, tell us about that, because that, I think that's something that probably quite a lot of people find and go through.
Yeah, I think that was, I mean, for me personally, I tried to get sober so many fucking times, you know, and I've been given, and I had so many reasons to stay sober, you know, but nothing really worked, you know. I went to multiple rehab centers. I fucking couldn't face another one, you know. I went through that so many times, but nothing got me sober, you know. I was always kind of pretending. I was always kind of doing what people said I should do and kind of faking it, you know, and kind of going, yeah, I should go and sort myself out, but then in 2 months I can fucking go back to myself and everyone will think I'm great, you know, or whatever. But then we had Isabel and everything fucking changed, you know, like, and it's one of those,
did it just change like overnight?
No. Well, I suppose so. I mean, I knew, you know, like, I still fucked up, like, after Isabel was born, you know, like, it took me 6 months to get sober. In that time, I tried fucking hard, you know, like, in the first 6 months, but I kept fucking up. And then I missed her crawling. I was out getting smashed, and, you know, I kind of missed that fucking thing. You know, and the thought of not having her, you know, and kind of being that disappointment, which I constantly was to other people, you know, but being that fucking disappointment to her was just too much for me to deal with, you know. So yeah, that kind of that was the one thing. And then I just kind of went, you know, I went to meetings and I kind of went one day at a time, and I did everything they fucking told me to do. For the first time ever, I read that book. I did, you know, and to be honest, I mean, I'm not a fucking AA guy. I'm not really a kind of one of those dudes. I don't go to meet, you know, it's not really part of my life now, but I did anything, you know, to kind of stay sober at that point. Yeah. And it all probably worked, you know, because I did, you know, so it's, yeah, but I think there's something about, you know, like, you know, the thought of her or any child seeing their parent in a disappointing light is not fucking cool, man. You know, like, you know, you want to be, you know, that's the last thing you want.
Yeah, you want to be a hero to them.
Completely. You never want to be the opposite to that, and the complete fucking opposite to that. So, yeah, that was the kick up the arse I needed.
I think, you know, when we're talking about how we've changed since becoming, you know, fathers, I think Matt's story shows how much people can change and how much, what a positive influence children can be on you, and what a catalyst for change can be. These beers are definitely kicking
they're
in.
Having an effect, aren't they?
100%. Tom, what was your favourite moment of the podcast so far?
God, there's so many. That's a difficult question. In all honesty,
that, you know what, I'm going to just talk. I know, I just want to talk about that, because basically what just happened here is that Tom was talking and he was a little bit far away from his microphone, and Benji got up from the sofa to adjust it and he got electrocuted by the microphone.
You all right, Benj?
No. That happened like 50 times today.
So, look, genuinely, like, it was quite special sitting here in the room with you guys and hearing both of you, first Seth, and then a few months later Jamie, talking kind of about their experience of their first child coming into the world. And, you know, it brought back a lot of memories for me as well, because a few months previously I'd become a father for the first time, and I've since had a second child as well. And I just think that everyone's story is different. It can be, you know, there's like no one birth story is the same, and everyone's is so, you know, personal. And I think you guys kind of, you know, really brought to life a lot of those feelings and emotions.
And then Nat said, I think I need to push. And Janelle again was like, okay, well, cool. Okay, let's do this then, and start getting everything ready. And was like, all right, when you need to push, you just start pushing. And then Nat, like, went into that kind of, like, screaming every obscenity, like, properly going for it sort of thing. Like, loud, to the point where I was like, okay, does it need to be that loud? this is, you know, keep it down a bit. I didn't actually say that, obviously, because I'm not a fucking moron. But yeah. And then Janelle said, okay, well, listen, she was pushing, and we could start to see the head, like, wow, coming through. And I was a bit like, and I was up at Nat's end, but you know, I could see everything. Like, yeah, I didn't have to go down that end to see, because she was kind of like half sitting up or whatever. And I could see the head, like the top of the head coming through. And I was like, okay, this is getting quite real now. And then she pushed for another like 20 minutes. And then Janelle said, okay, look, when I say stop pushing, stop pushing. And she said it. She not pushed. She said it. And then out came the baby. Like literally, like it wasn't like a head for ages, then shoulders. It was literally just like straight out. Woo! All in one. Like, woo. And it was purple. The baby was purple. And I didn't know what to... I was like, oh, it's a baby. It's a baby right there. And I couldn't get my head around it. And then she picked it up, gave it to Nat immediately. And Nat went, oh my God. And then we both looked at each other and went, what is it? Because we didn't know. And we just looked. And so we all looked, because we just forgot. I think I did see, but just didn't register it. Just didn't think. I was just so much like, oh my God, there's a fucking baby lying there. Cried. It screamed straight away. And then we looked at it, and it was a girl.
I need my girl. I need my girl.
A little girl, even though we were convinced it would be a boy.
Wee!
Yeah. So, but the weird thing was, as I said, we had a shuffle playlist going on.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And the tune, as she was born, and I was skipping tunes. I didn't look at what I was skipping into, because it was on shuffle, and I was skipping because Ellie Goulding came on at one point.
Right.
And I was like, uh-uh.
No.
My baby is not being born to Ellie Goulding. No way. So I skipped it a couple of times. And then the Nationals' I Need My Girl came on as she was born. And I was like, ah, that's weird. It's a girl. And then I turned to Nat and I went, so the name we had from the start was for a girl, was Matilda.
Right.
And we'd never really found anything we liked more than that. So I said to Nat, I was like, so, and as we were convinced it was a boy, we'd had loads of like conversations about a boy's name. So I went, oh, so I guess we're going to call her Matilda then. And she went, I guess, I don't know. Like, maybe. I went, well, let's think about it for a bit.
Yeah.
As I said that, Alt J's Matilda came on the shuffle.
And she needs you. This is for Matilda. And she needs you. This is for Matilda.
That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, like, no lie. It wasn't like three songs later. It was that song, Matilda, came on.
You don't have a choice then, do you?
And I just looked at that and I had to sit down. I was like, that's too weird. And I said to Nat, I went, well, that's...
And how many songs were there on the playlist?
There was like 9 hours of songs.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, and we've been through like 2 hours of it. And I turned to Nat, I went, well, that's that then, right? So yeah, and she said, yeah, I guess so.
Oh, well, to be... it's a great name. So like, it's not like you were stuck with... I could think like Roxanne or something like that.
Yeah, and to be fair, we'd put the tune on the playlist because we'd like the...
We like the
name, you know, and the song. But for it to come on right then was a bit weird.
It was
and then
a bit weird.
Yeah, so we called her Matilda India Tucker.
But one other point possibly worth mentioning is a guest that we had on maybe two or three episodes back, I think it was episode 10, a really lovely guy called Shawnee O'Kane, who came on here and was very generous with his time and his thoughts and all that kind of thing. And he does something for a living that I didn't even really know existed. He's a kind of fatherhood expert.
Yeah.
He works with dads from all walks of life trying to kind of just basically help them out and ensure that they get, you know, the best deal possible in terms of being dads and all the great things that come with that. And I think one point that he made that really hit home, that resonated with me, which I think I'm guilty of not really having properly taken on board, is that when we talk about fatherhood, when we talk about dads and fathers, like, we're talking about so many different people. It's not just one, like,
yeah,
type of person. And we probably, maybe I can speak for us all, at times guilty of being in a bit of a bubble and thinking that,
yeah,
and particularly in this podcast, you know, we think that we all have, you know, we all have quite privileged experiences of what it means to be a dad and being able to afford, you know, like good pushchairs and baby monitors and taking them on holiday and taking them to soft play and nice things and all that stuff. But fatherhood can be a real fucking graft. Like, as Shawnee, I think, like, what he brought to podcast was saying, you know, there's 15-year-old dads out there who can't afford the bus fare to, you know, to go and see their kids and all sorts of other stuff. And, you know, people battling addiction and, you know, domestic issues and
being in prison.
Yeah. And hopefully that's something going forward, you know, with the next, you know, 12 months of this podcast, is I think we should try and branch out a little bit and think about, giving a voice and a platform to these other dads that sometimes we kind of don't always, you know, think about and talk about enough.
I think we pulled off a bit of a coup by getting in our guest for episode 8, who I was quite a big fan of before he came in anyway. Even bigger fan after he came in, was Ben Bailey-Smith, aka Doc Brown.
Legend.
That
was a particularly, I mean, anecdotally, yeah, I got a lot of positive feedback about that episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just people were just getting in touch with me, you know, just out of the blue saying, I heard that ep with Doc Brown and it was sick. they might have used like different sort of terminology, yeah, but on that.
Yeah,
sort of
I thought
thing,
it was a good episode.
I did not have this power of words. I did not have this sense of conviction. I did not have the success in my professional life. I did not have the ability to do what I do today before I had children. I was an underpaid youth worker when my first daughter was born. I got on stage for the first time and tried to do stand-up, which has led to all these amazing things that I've managed to do since, and to a flourishing and financially stable career. I got on a stage to begin all of that at 30 years old with a toddler and a bun in the oven and no way of knowing how I was gonna pay the heating bills. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. It was a different type of pressure. I had to be funny. I had to make it work. It was a huge gamble, but having the children forced me to say to myself, there's only one outcome.
Yeah.
It has to work. It has to work. I'm not thinking about the other outcome. Whereas before that, I'd be like, oh yeah, I quite like to do this. I quite like to do that. But I'd also like to play FIFA for a bit longer. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
completely.
So the negatives are profound and they are overpowering at times, but so are the positives. It's a completely even thing. Like, the amount of times I've looked at that front door and just thought, I'm fucking moving to Mexico. I'm going to Mexico. I'm changing my name. I'm going to find one of those Better Call Saul motherfuckers and get a new passport. I'm done. And the amount of times that I thought, I couldn't be prouder. I don't want to be anywhere other than here, yeah, watching my kids being amazing. I can't wait for the day that I have two grown women come around my house for Christmas dinner telling me about their lives and the amazing things that they're doing. Mm, yeah. I can't wait for that fucking day.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
And I'm getting closer every day. My kids, they're terrified of terrorism. Mm. Absolutely terrified. It keeps them up at night.
Okay. How do you deal with that? Like, what's your kind of... Because, I mean, that's something I've thought
really
about.
It's really, really tough, and it brings me to tears quite regularly because I can't control it. I can't control terrorism. I can't control this level of... I don't want to say evil because I hate it when people say evil. Terrorists are normal people with mental problems. Mm. That's what you never hear about. All you hear is like, he's evil. How did he get radicalized? Mate, he's a fucking nutcase. If he thinks it's okay to kill someone for what he believes in. Mate, if I thought that was okay, there would be so, anytime someone said Tribal Quest, they're not all that, they'd be dead. They would be dead. Do you know what I'm saying? They'd be dead. You have to be mentally ill to kill someone for something that you believe in.
Yeah.
Like, it's bonkers.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a hard thing to explain to little kids.
Mm.
So, you know, the monster rhetoric, the evil rhetoric that you get in the press, I guess that's a bit simpler, but I don't like to be simple with my kids. I like to be quite real with them. And I give them the harsh reality quite a lot. And to be fair, my wife's on board with that as well. And neither of us had the most straightforward or simplest of upbringings. My wife's way, way tougher than mine, you know? So we're very much like, these are the realities of life, but there will always be helpers. There will always be people, good people that you can turn to that will look after you. And there will always be love and there will always be happiness in the world. And the fear and the horror, it doesn't last. It doesn't last. It doesn't last. It's always like some temporary shit that someone's trying to throw out there to make a statement.
Mm.
And it's petty.
Yeah.
Whereas love and happiness, togetherness, that shit lasts forever.
Well, it was great to like hear him read from his book.
Yeah.
His children's book.
I didn't realize how little money you make.
No, that really surprised me, actually. I always thought there'd be tons of money in
printing money. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess unless you're, as he said, unless you're Julia Donaldson.
Yeah. I guess there could be lots of money in it.
But it's the merch that surrounds it, isn't it? It's all the extra merch. And unless you get that, and he's done a big purple bear, and there's already been like purple dinosaurs, and the Gruffalo's kind of a bit purple.
Yeah.
So is it not? Tom's giving me a look.
He's brown.
Brown, okay. But he's got purple spikes or some shit.
Yeah,
do you know what?
Yeah, that's right. That is right. He's got purple warts all over his
back. Come on, don't pretend you don't know.
Nobly knees and turned out toes and a poisonous wart at the end of his nose. Now, hang on. There's something, purple prickles all over his back.
There you go.
That is true.
I read it quite recently to Matilda, the Gruffalo. It's the first time I read it. It's good.
It is good. This is, maybe explains its popularity, but it's one of the books. Yeah. Like, children's books get bored. Yeah, they get boring quite quickly.
Because it's got a rhythm to it.
It's
got a wicked little rhythm to it. But do you know what? It does. It does. Benji's laughing. But it's got a rhythm. And you can get in a bit of a flow with it. Whereas her other book, I'm just going to say it, Stickman, Nat rates it. I don't like it. I think it's a bit, there's nothing to it.
Really?
Whereas Gruffalo's cool.
I haven't read it, so I don't know.
Yeah.
I really like Ben's book.
Yeah. And talk about a rhythm and a flow. He showed us the best way to read it.
So it starts off a big picture, a big close up of the bear. And it goes, and it goes, and it goes, and it goes. I am bear. And I am bear. The suit I wear has purple hair. In my tummy, mostly honey. Here's a thingy I find funny. Knock, knock. Who's there? Munch, munch. My lunch. I do magic. Most bears won't. Now you see me, now you don't. Look behind you. Boom, boom, boom. Do you like games? I do too. Cops and robbers, that's my favorite. Donuts missing, guess who ate it? Fun with friends, that's the main thing. Favorite hobby? Probably painting. I am bear, and I was there, now I'm gone. So long.
Mark Harris. Oh, Mark Harris was a legend.
What? The word oxytocin, I don't think anyone comes across that word until they become pregnant. And then it's the buzzword. Yeah. Everyone fucking knows about oxytocin, right?
Yeah.
And I think he sold the idea of why oxytocin is the absolute one and why it should be harnessed and created and your missus should be put in an environment in which I'm starting to sound like him when I talk about
you
it.
Are. You I'm are. Getting, you're channeling.
I'm channeling that, Mark
that
Harris.
Kind of enthusiasm.
But yeah, I thought it was great. And I thought he had a lot to say on why oxytocin is the sexy hormone. So I was at the NCT and oxytocin came up and I was going on about it because I probably read that chapter the night before and I was being so sort of like knew exactly what it was. But people don't really know what it is until they're kind of told. So do you want to just kind of give a brief kind of explanation to what oxytocin is?
Oxytocin, it's quite a trendy hormone, really, because we know that it's the hormone responsible for connection, the hormone responsible for affection.
And do men have it as well?
Men and women have the same hormones in their bodies as each other. Do you know, we were all female before 8 weeks.
Yep.
And then the clitoral head, which is not just the hood, the clitoris extends round the vagina and back. In us, it became penis and testicles. So we have the same hormones in our body. They just dance in different ways.
Right.
So oxytocin is a hormone responsible for connection and bonding and all that kind of stuff and the community feeling. It's also responsible in a woman for sexual release. So when a woman is released sexually, and if she's lucky, has an orgasm, her body is awash with oxytocin. In fact, one obstetrician, Michelle O'Dont, has said that orgasm and birth are one event separated by time.
Right.
The family of hormones responsible for a woman releasing herself sexually are the same family of hormones responsible for the birthing process and breastfeeding, funny enough.
Is that why they say that that's, you know, when, you know, you're overdue, that a shag is a...
Well, yes.
See, that's bollocks, isn't it?
No, not completely. not completely.
Well...
So in the old days, we used to say, if you ever, you know, have a jump, right, that any friction on the woman's cervix, which is the opening to the uterus, causes the pituitary gland to release the hormones responsible for starting the birth off.
Right.
Most men's knobs ain't going to reach that far, let's be frank. The other part of... Sorry.
Well, no, that's fine.
The other thing is that semen has something called prostaglandin in it, which again is a hormone responsible for starting the birth off. The prostaglandin in sperm is not, in terms of its molecular structure, is not the same. So the important component when it comes to starting the birthing process off is a woman being released sexually.
Yeah, there was some interesting, eye-opening things in his chat. He talked about how like breastfeeding is linked to birth and to orgasm as well, and there was like he was
a very sexual man.
He talked about the fact that like he's been delivering babies, and like he said that on a number of occasions, so more than once. I think he said actually four times women have said to him in the delivery room, do you mind if I masturbate while I'm having this baby?
Yeah, and that's not the right, that's just okay. I was going to say, that's not the mum. It's just a nurse.
But also, like, can we just take a moment to...
Sorry. That's the beer talking. Sorry, go on, Tom. Yeah, what?
I was just saying, can we just take a moment to get our head round the fact that... Did he say that they at one point had... Is it five children under the age of six?
Wasn't it? Was it six children?
I think they very much later adopted a sixth child.
Oh, right.
I think they had five under the age of six and a half, something like that. And that is like
that's
mental.
I mean, how old is...
He said that for like that whole time, like his wife was never stopped breastfeeding for like 7 years. I don't know, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is fucking nuts, man.
Yeah.
For episode 10, we had Shawnee O'Kane on, who is a fatherhood expert, which is quite a kind of grand title. And he had that fucking mental story about how he conceived. Well, actually, I don't think it was the moment they actually conceived.
No.
But he was like trying to donate sperm for the conception of a child with this lesbian couple from...
Zimbabwe. Yeah.
And they were arriving late.
Yeah.
And so he put his jizz in the oven.
Yeah.
You know the song, All That You Want Is Another Baby? What was that? Is them. That's Ace all they, yep, yep. They were the Zimbabwean Ace of Base, and that was who they really had their sights set on having this, you know, this child. And I was just like, yeah, that's just do it and sure, you know, I'll be involved. And they were like, oh, well, we'll talk about it later on and all that. It was all quite like vague and, you know, and they said, we're going to come around and we're going to just do this practice go and we'll see how it goes. And I was like, okay, that's fine. And they said, yeah, could you just have everything ready for us? I was like, yeah, that's fine. That's not a problem. That's easy. And I, well, I can't really romanticize this, but I shot into a polystyrene cup. And I was really pleased with myself. And I was like, yeah, they're going to love this. I was like, should I wrap it up? I don't know. Like, what do you do? What do you do? Like a gift tag. And then whilst it was in the cup, they said, oh, we're caught in traffic. We're going to be late. And I was like, okay, that's fine. So I wish I could had a camera watching me at that time, because in my state, I started to panic because I assumed that when the sperm gets exposed to air, it starts to die. So I turned the oven on a low heat. And I put it in the oven. Because I assumed...
Not the fridge.
No, because my balls are warm. So why why would I... My friends, I said, why didn't you put it in the freezer? But like, because it's just come from a warm place. Why would I want it unless I was like... You know, like a snow monster or something. I mean, why would I want to put it in the freezer? Mix? And also, it's quite unhygienic.
Right.
So the oven is completely sterile. And so I put it in the oven on a low heat and it was in there for about 30 to 40 minutes. And when it came round, I'll never forget this. I just, it was like another person now. When I look at me then, now it's just like two different people. And when I pulled it out, it all kind of decrepit. It was all crumpled up. But the sperm was like intact and it was still moving around. And they were just happy because they just wanted sperm, you know. So they were like, "Yeah, it's great. Give us all sperm. Give us all your sperm." And then I was like, "Okay, so do I like turn one of you upside down and pour it in? How does it work?" These were really clear, and there was nothing really on. Like,
you can't Google baster, that, can you?
Turkey baster,
yeah.
Is that
well, yeah. Well, they'd bought a home insemination kit, and
because they'd come prepared.
Yeah, of course, because that's all that they want is another baby. So they knew exactly what they want, and so. So they left, and then I was it. So I was like, okay, so I'm gonna go out with the boys tonight. So I went out with all the lads, and we were all drinking all night, and they were like, give me loads of stick. and whilst we were out, I was getting hammered, and I get a text message from who would then be the non-biological mum, and she said, hey, you know, thank you for your sperm today. I never got that text ever before. I got it that night. I've never got it since. And she's like, oh, you know, it was really kind of you. And I was like, oh, thanks. And
I think every like one night stand should finish with that text. Thank you for your sperm today.
And she said, you know, but did you know that, you know, styrofoam kills sperm? And I'd be like, well, no, I fucking didn't go to sperm school. How would I know that?
But you're saying the oven doesn't.
And she said, you know, we've just read up on it and we'll come round tomorrow for some more.
But there was an addendum to that story, because there was another, I think because of the polystyrene cup incident, they had to come round the next day.
Yeah.
And he was not feeling quite, he'd had a few drinks with the lads.
Yeah.
And was having difficulty arousing himself.
Yeah.
And so he asked his flatmate to stand in as a jizz double.
And hilarity ensued.
Hilarity ensued.
As much as I like Elliot Ray from episode 11, who runs the music football fatherhood website, I do feel like, and I felt at the time, he had kind of just stolen our idea as to what we're doing here and put it in a website form, which is actually probably a lot smarter move than doing a podcast. But
so was that because I'm not sure about the genesis of it. Was it?
No, he was definitely doing it before us. Okay. We just came to it late and I just saw it and I realized there's no such thing as an original idea, because everything I thought we brought to this, he's kind of already done. But
oh well.
But hey,
look, there's room for both of us, right?
Yeah, exactly. we should talk about an article that drew our attention to you, which was in The Independent, which you wrote, which said, the headline of it was, "I'm a young, married, professional black father, and I don't exist." What inspired that? Because that's quite a provocative kind of headline, but I thought it was a really interesting read, and you were talking about there was, you know, not enough black role models in sort of in the media, and do you want to just kind of elaborate on, and that was in The Independent, when was that?
That was in July.
Okay.
Actually, yeah, that was in July.
So what prompted you to write that?
So I think it was about, so when I was saying earlier before we started recording about just sharing more, I feel like there's probably loads of things I want to say sometimes and don't because people ask you about it afterwards, which is something I'm getting comfortable with. If you say something in public, they're going to ask you about it. Makes sense, obviously. You know, fear of maybe it being career limiting or whatever. But now I just don't really care. So I'm happy just to express how I feel and just be honest. And I think with that, I was like overwhelmed with the response to it. I think it was like the second most shared article from The Independent that day. People really felt it, and I struck a chord and was relating to so many people. And I think there were people that were like, oh my gosh, I feel like that. I just didn't even think to say it or didn't articulate it in that way. So I guess it was just me just thinking, do you know what? This is something that I guess I've been experiencing. And I think there's two things. I think it's the kind of just realization that when you go out as a dad, probably more so as a black dad, people just don't really know how to respond to you if you're with your baby, especially when they're quite young.
If you're on your own, just the two of you, yeah?
Yeah. Right, so I used to take Eleni out when she was like 3 months, I think was the first time I ever took her out on my own. So I used to take her out, make sure my wife has a rest, be out with this young baby. And people would just be quite surprised and quite shocked. And it was weird. Like, I was living in Walthamstow at the time, actually, which is actually quite a liberal left place. It was weird. People just didn't know how to react to me. If I go out on my own, it's fine. Like, when, as soon as I'm with a baby, all of a sudden, it's just a bit weird. And some people...
What was the reaction?
So some people would be like really overly like, oh my gosh, you're out with your baby. Like, you know, like over... happy.
Compensating.
Yeah, which is fine. Like, they were excited, you know, that's good, whatever, cool. And I felt other people were a bit more standoffish, especially if you're going to a place where there's other mums as well.
Yeah.
So I really noticed, I'm like, wow, people don't know how to respond to you. It's either very kind of like, oh my gosh, that's great, you're a dad, you're out, amazing, take my money, take my child, we love you. Or it was
vote for you.
Basically, yeah. Or it was the other kind of, this is a bit weird, so I'm going to avoid him.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm not going to engage with him, so I'm going to pretend he's not there, sort of thing.
Wow.
And I felt like this is weird. I don't experience this when I'm on my own, normally, depending on how I'm dressed. But if I'm dressed like this, normally people are quite, you know, just
shirt and trousers. Normal.
Yeah,
shoes.
Like I've been at work, I have a job, whatever. Yep. So I thought, you know what, I want to express this.
Yeah. One of the things that you say in your article is that you don't blame people for having that reaction necessarily, because you feel that, you know, that's sort of that's the inevitable kind of effect of like the media and like advertising and the way that you don't see that person represented in those forums.
Yeah. I think it's getting better. I don't know if they've read the article. But I'm seeing a few more adverts just with normal black men.
Yeah.
Proportionately, you see a lot of us being rappers, being footballers, being drug dealers, being criminals. We see that a lot. Proportionately, there needs to be a readjustment of proportion. Like, there needs to be a representation of actually what black British men are, which a lot of us are just normal people who live normal lives, who look after the kids and do normal stuff.
So on episode 12, which marked a year, obviously, we had Alex Baker on.
We did.
Famous for
Kerrang Radio.
Yep.
Being the new artist overlord.
Yep.
He
was fucking brilliant. We only recorded that relatively recently, obviously.
Yeah.
It's still very fresh in my mind.
Yeah.
He was funny. He was talking about like how he has like an aversion to like sauce and things like that.
Burger juice on him.
But he was happy to have like baby like shit on him.
Yeah. But baby, I think it was baby shit in his eye.
Yeah.
But any burger juice around his mouth and his beard, he wasn't comfortable with.
I had this really weird moment where I was convinced, because I'm freaked out by like stuff on me. Like if I'm like eating a burger or whatever and I get some burger juice in my beard, I'll have to wipe my face after every bite, you know, just constantly go through mounds of tissues. Awful for the environment in many ways.
And that's your excuse, is it?
Yeah. But so I was really concerned that like the snot and the puke and the poo and everything was going to like really rock my world in a negative way. But I remember like Mel was recovering, blood everywhere, awful sight. And the baby was crying and I was like, oh God. And she started like going, like the amniotic fluid started coming out because she was a C-section baby. Apparently it comes out later when you have a C-section baby. No one tells you this stuff.
Yeah.
We can get onto that in a bit if you like. That's stuff that people don't tell you. but yeah, so I had this situation where she started to choke and I was like, right, I've just got to get her. So I picked her up and she started being sick. And this was the moment where like her bodily fluid was going to be on me for the first time. And Mel went, get a tissue, get a muslin cloth or whatever they're called things. I always get those wrong. She's always telling me off for getting it wrong. Get one of those things. And I was like, no, she can just do it on me. And she was like, right. And I swear it was on that slow motion and my long hair was like swaying in the, you know, with the projectile vomiting. And I had all this sick in my hair. And I kind of loved it, you know. And it was really weird how I felt. And since I've had snot and poo on me and all the rest of it. And I almost feel like, okay. No, just Saturday night, man, with all that. But I sort of feel like your brain, when you're a dad, and I guess it's the same for mums, it kind of switches off the thing that makes it gross. Yeah. So they could do anything to you, and you kind of your brain just doesn't.
But what about the burger juice? Are you still
burger juice, mate? I have to have a stack of tissues. It's awful. But yeah, baby can shit in my eyes. All good. You know, one bite of a GBK, game over.
But I kind of get what you're saying in terms of like when it's your baby, that kind of stuff goes out the window. And I think that's, you know, before I became a dad, I very much, and I think I said this before, you'd look at someone changing their baby's nappy and it's full of shit, whatever. And you're kind of like, that is disgusting. I'm never going to be able to do that. And then it's your kid and you're like, yeah, whatever. You just do it because you don't really, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what he was saying. And I mean, I might be wrong. He might just really love it, but...
Yeah, he might just now love shit. Look, Joe, we've had some like fantastic guests over the course of the last, you know, year.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you like to have in the next year?
If I could have anyone, or just anyone.
Yeah, like any like dream guest.
I reckon we get The Rock on.
The Rock?
The Rock. Because he's a dad, right. And he's just about to be a dad again. Just announced it recently on Instagram. He's going to have another girl. I'm a big fan of Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Mainly because I think he comes across as quite a down-to-earth guy.
Yeah.
I'm not being funny. I genuinely love this guy. And I think he'd have a lot to say. I think he's good. I think he's, from where he kind of came from in terms of his background, if anyone knows anything about him, he's quite humble beginnings, worked his way up, hard work, now to, I think he's the biggest paid actor in the world now.
No way.
He's
and well, he is a brilliant actor.
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I think he'd have a lot to say about fatherhood. So listen, Dwayne, you got my number, give me a call. We'll get you on. What about you? Who's your kind of, who would you say is your number one fantasy guest?
You know what? I've got a few that I really like.
Any of them as realistic as The Rock?
They're more unrealistic.
Unrealistic.
So the realistic one, I think it might be possible, is I think Ian Wright would be really fun.
Ian Wright, yeah.
But the unrealistic one, which is obviously impossible, is Barack Obama.
Okay.
Thoughts?
I agree. That's pretty unrealistic.
Yeah, but we take Trump.
Tom, get on it. Nail it. Just call up his people. Get him on.
Okay, so that's it for this most recent episode of The Good, The Dad and The Ugly, the fatherhood podcast. Okay, well, I think that about wraps it up. Okay, well, then let's wrap it up there. Well, I think that probably about wraps up the conversation for today. Okay, that's it for this episode. Thank you, everyone. We're going to wrap it up there.
I have to say, it's been great. Like, I've had a fantastic time this last 12 months.
It's been fun.
It has been fun.
And hopefully we're going to do another 12 months. And also, thank you to everyone who's listened, because it's been...
Yeah, thank you to everyone who's listened and like downloaded and just like rated and reviewed and all that shit.
Of you could rate and review.
More of you could. But don't do it if you're going to send fucking shit reviews like that. That was that guy?
That guy, he said something about Matt Willis not being funny. It's like, that's not the point. That's not why you don't rate a podcast series about one guy not being funny, even though he was fucking funny. So I don't know what his problem was. And he's not a comedian.
No.
So
I think the guy just...
What's your beef?
Didn't like Matt Willis.
But why reason. Would you not?
Because he's a dickhead.
Not Matt Willis.
Not Matt Willis, the guy. Right. Yeah, yeah. So the guy's a dickhead.
Yeah. So Tom, who do we have coming on the show in the next year?
Well, I don't want to give too much away. I have been working hard behind the scenes, and let me just say this, that maybe sometimes dreams do come true.
It's The Rock, innit? Donald Trump.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.